Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know we're gonna
have we did. We started to burn many things we found, too many things we found, including uranium, which we should never have burned in any way, shape, or form, not to mention coal, oil, and natural gas, or what we call King Kong. Coal, oil, nukes, and gas. We're here for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. We got four great guests, actually. Three separate lines, three separate locations, plus me here back in Central Ohio. I've been doing the show from California for a while, but back in the snow and the ice, which we hope is melting soon. Let's bring on some global warming to this town, but keep it in balance, please. We're going to start off talking today about the Davis-Vesey nuclear plant in Ohio and this ridiculous but interesting battle that's going on between the owners of Davis-Vesey and the Exelon, and a big utility, a nuclear utility that doesn't own Davis-Vesey and is complaining about a deal that appears on the brink of being made by the Ohio Public Utilities Commission to bail out Davis-Vesey along with some other coal burners. And then we're going to talk a bit about Exelon and other stuff, nuclear stuff, and then we're going to segue in with two great guests in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, who've been fighting the Yucca Mountain nuke dump for decades and are now embroiled in an amazing fight on the part of the idiots from the nuclear power industry and the other utility companies who want to stop solar energy. Who would have thought that we would run into political, structural resistance from putting solar panels on your rooftop? But Nevada is on the brink of making some regulatory changes there that will drive or attempt to drive solar out of the state. It's quite amazing, actually. Of all places, Nevada, where Elon Musk and Tesla have committed, I guess, $1 billion to building a new a battery factory, and here these regulators turn around and want to stab the solar industry in the back. So we got a full boat, a full agenda today. We have our great guests, Kevin Camps and Dave Kraft, frequent guests on our show to talk about issues of nukes. Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, are you with us?
Hello, Harvey. I'm here.
Hey, and where are you? You're in D.C. or our nation's capital?
I'm in the nuclear free zone of Tacoma Park, Maryland, 100 feet from the den of corruption.
All right, so you're in the People's Republic of Tacoma Park there.
Yes, indeed.
That's good. We like that. And Tacoma Park's a great place in Maryland, and you're Beyond Nuclear offices there, and you've been on the case for God knows how long, Kevin Camps. But always, of course, a Kalamazoo boy. You can take the boy out of Michigan, but can't take the Michigan out of the boy, right?
I live in political exile. That's right.
There you go. Dave Kraft, you're talking to us from Chicago?
Yes, I'm in Chirac.
Chirac. All right. Yes. There you go. You are with Nuclear Energy Information Service. Is that right?
That's right. We're 34 years old now. Going to be 35 in June.
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of birthdays, I must reveal and revel in the fact that on December 31st, I turned 70 and jumped in the mighty pond there, the Pacific Ocean, at sunset.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
It was one of the great. I was with my daughter. I embarrassed the hell out of her by taking off all my clothes on the beach, but there weren't too many people still on the beach. Those who were still on the beach fainted, but we were able to revive them. And I jumped into the mighty Pacific, froze my tush for a nanosecond, and boy, I got to tell you, that felt really great, right in the middle of a gorgeous sunset which I can still see. Judy Treichel and Steve Frischman, you're on Nevada, yeah?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, is Steve on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, guys, you are in the belly of a certain beast. You are living right next door, I understand, to Sheldon Adelson and the multi-trillion-dollar racket that he runs. Is that right?
Yes.
We can talk about him when we get to him. Has Sheldon Adelson said anything or done anything about nuke power, or is he just totally preoccupied with other issues? Does he have a stake in Yucca Mountain?
No,
hello, deafening silence on that one.
He's never said anything at all about Yucca Mountain. And
all right, well, that's good. We talked about...
None of the big hotel casinos have, mostly because, unless it's imminent, they don't want to talk about it because they think it chills the whole system for them.
Yeah, well, they're not... Of course, the casino owners do want to lay low on Yucca Mountain, but I assume if they start to move ahead with it, we'll see them in some form of opposition. I can't imagine that the casino owners are going to want a Yucca Mountain open for nuclear waste. But we'll talk about that. We'll get to that. Let's start first things first here. We want to talk about the Davis-Besse nuclear plant, and we always love it when the dinosaurs fight each other. Tyrannosaurus Rex versus Stegosaurus Maximus here. Kevin, you want to set the stage for what's happening with Davis-Besse in Ohio and the fight between FirstEnergy and Exelon?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some amazing developments that really kind of came out of the blue with Exelon. Exelon, right about New Year's, did a filing with the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio that said, hey, here we are. FirstEnergy wants a $4 billion bailout to prop up the Davis-Besse Atomic Reactor and several coal plants in Ohio, including Samus and Ohio Valley Electric Co-op coal plants. So Exelon, in short, said we could beat that by $2 billion. And then Tim Judson at Nuclear Information and Resource Service did some analysis of the Exelon proposal to the PUCO and noticed that Exelon really did not have a problem with Davis-Besse being bailed out. Really, their problem was more with the coal bailouts, and that makes a lot of sense on one level because the members of the Nuclear Energy Institute tend to circle their wagons against the world all the time in all kinds of ways. So that happened in New Year's. More recently, just some days back now, Dynegy, which is another fossil fuel burner out of Houston, Texas, but does business in Ohio, runs coal plants, they beat Exelon's offer to the PUCO. They said they could do it for $2.5 billion less than FirstEnergy's offering. So you're right, there are these dinosaurs of the dirty energy industry duking it out, and I guess we will see what happens. We still have strong resistance to the Davis-Besse bailout by the likes of the Sierra Club, Beyond Coal campaign, which, you know, their focus is on the coal aspects, but they are opposed to Davis-Besse getting bailed out because it's a package deal at this point. You've got other environmental groups in there. So, you know, this is in the context of Davis-Besse's severe and worsening cracking, which, you know, whether it's an earthquake or a tornado missile or some other force, could literally knock chunks of concrete off the exterior of the concrete containment field building and shower them down onto safety significant systems below. And when you've got safety systems knocked out at the same time that you've got a compromised or, you know, damaged containment, you've got real trouble at a nuclear power plant. That's how catastrophic radioactivity releases occur. So ratepayers should not be subsidizing this game of radioactive Russian roulette on the Great Lakes shoreline at Davis-Besse.
Well, describe to us, Kevin, you've done it before on this show, it never ceases to amaze me, but and I'm going to continue with my assumption that Davis-Besse is as in bad a physical condition as any nuclear operating nuclear reactor on Earth. Tell us, describe us in your wonderful graphic detail exactly what's going on with this shield building at Davis-Besse, which is outside of Toledo.
Yeah, there's official versions that make no sense, but I can relay that. FirstEnergy claims that the blizzard of 1978, 100-mile-an-hour winds, severe blizzard conditions, drove moisture into the shield building, into this concrete face of concrete containment that had never been weather sealed when it was built in the early 1970s, because it was not required to by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or its predecessor, the Atomic Energy Commission, and that the cracking was initiated over the course of a few days in January of 1978. And this is severe cracking across the shield building, 3 inches deep where the structural rebar is located. And the reason they argued that, because there are probably a large number of root causes of the cracking, a diversity of root causes of the cracking. And they focused on that one possibility because what it did was it denied us a hearing before the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, because we had intervened against the 20-year license extension, and you, as the intervener, the environmental petitioner, have to prove aging relatedness. And since they were arguing, with their hand on the Bible, that it was the blizzard of 78, it took place in January of 78 for 3 days, and it hasn't gotten worse since. We were denied a hearing for years on end. And then, come September of 2013, First Energy admitted the cracking is growing, and they didn't know why. And we said, well, it's obviously aging-related. We were still denied a hearing. Then in summer of 2014, they theorized that it's ice-wedging crack propagation, that when they weather-sealed the shield building 40 years too late in the summer and fall of 2012, after the cracking was discovered, they accidentally locked water in the walls. Oh, water locked in the walls that they hadn't told us about in the course of this legal proceeding, a 2.5-year cover-up. And so now they have water locked in the walls, and every time it freezes at the site, the cracks grow by a 0.5 inch or more. And that can be up to 9 inches per year, they've admitted. And very recently, we're talking this past September and then this past November, before what's called the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards, the very last hurdle at the NRC for their 20-year license extension, all of a sudden First Energy says, we've known since we found the cracks in October of 2011 that chunks could fall off the exterior face, and we do have safety-significant systems and structures and components down below, like the borated water storage tank and electrical systems and the entire auxiliary building, which is filled with a lot of different safety systems. And we've known from the start that this could be a problem. Well, that's the first time that they had ever said that. This is now late 2015. The cracks were discovered over 4 years earlier. We've had a legal process going. None of that information was ever shared with us or with the public. And, you know, it's pretty late in the game, and all of a sudden NRC is done with their review, and they rubber-stamped the 20-year extension. You know, at Crystal River, Florida, severe cracking led to the permanent shutdown of that atomic reactor. But as NRC often does, they learn from such things and they never let them happen again. So they think that they've covered their rear end on this one legally, I guess, and they've approved 20 more years of these risks.
So Davis Bessie basically is crumbling. It's falling to pieces. This reactor went online in the 70s, so it's more than 40 years old. And so the technology dates back to the early 60s. And they're running a 50-year-old technology operation there with a 40-year-old crumbling structure. And they now want the ratepayers of Ohio to subsidize it to the tune of $3 to $4 billion moving ahead. Is that right?
And the latest bad news at Davis Bessie, there's such a long list, but the latest is that the emergency diesel generators we now know, thanks to the analysis by Dave Lockbaum of the Union of Concerned Scientists, have been dysfunctional since at least 2009. So if called upon during an emergency to cool the core, the emergency diesel generators would have started up, they would have generated heat, and he calls them, Lockbaum does, glorified, astronomically expensive space heaters, because the breakers would not have closed and they would have not have connected to the safety systems they were supposed to provide electricity to, and they would not have functioned. And the meltdown would have proceeded without emergency diesel generators saving the day, not unlike what happened at Fukushima Daiichi, although that took a tsunami 45 feet tall. At Davis Bessie, they just had the diesel generators set at the wrong setting. Too low. They couldn't have closed the breakers for the last, whatever, 7 years that we know of, probably further back in time, actually.
Oh, small details. So there we are. That's the situation. The Davis Bessie nuclear plant in northern Ohio, outside of Toledo, is another catastrophe, and falling apart literally. And the Ohio Public Utilities Commission wants to force the ratepayers of Ohio to is losing money too, not just that it's about to fall apart; it's losing money. And the Ohio Public Utilities Commission wants the ratepayers of Ohio to bail it out because it's losing money and it's 40 years old and it's falling to pieces and it can't sustain an emergency power outage because the diesel generators don't work. Thank you, Kevin Camps of Nuclear Information Resource Service. Beyond Nuclear. Stick with us. And Dave Kraft, you're in Chicago. And you are right in the belly of the Exelon beast. And I like Exelon because it's one of the many utilities that sounds whose name sounds like a laxative. So tell us what kind of player we're talking about here that would go in to Ohio and mess with their fellow nuclear utilities application for a bailout.
Well, Harvey, you guys characterize the situation as the dinosaurs fighting each other.
Yeah.
I have a different interpretation of it. I think we're moving out of the age of nuclear power and into the age of decommissioning. And what you're seeing now is the last gasp where the cannibals are eating the cannibals. I refer to them as cannibals because whether it's been a fossil utility or a nuclear utility, their function has to literally been to feast on local communities as much as they can, whether it was during the regulated markets prior to the 90s or the deregulated ones that we allegedly have now. Their function is to behave like sharks, to get as much out of a community as they possibly can, as long as they can. As Kevin has amply demonstrated, they will squeeze every last electron they can out of a failing mechanical unit, no matter what the cost, with the rubber stamp of the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So you ask what kind of a entity Exelon is. Well, it's the chief cannibal, at least in the nuclear industry. They own or operate over 20% of the nuclear capacity of the United States, started here in Illinois as Commonwealth Edison. And here in Illinois, we have 11 of their operating reactors here. If we were a nation, we would just be behind Ukraine, I think, in 13th place internationally, in terms of our nuclear capacity in Illinois. The real, I wouldn't even call it irony, it's more like chutzpah to the Exelon Davis Bessie story, is that over the last 2 years here in Illinois, Exelon was doing exactly the same thing that they were accusing the Ohio utilities of doing over there. They 2 years ago were running around the state legislature painting pictures of woe and catastrophe for Illinois if they didn't get a $1.5 billion bailout, because it just so happened that over the last several years, five of their nuclear units were allegedly unprofitable and losing money. And if the legislature wouldn't grant them an immediate bailout, Lord knows what would happen to Illinois. The lights would go out and, we would be back in the Stone Age or something, I guess. Well, fortunately, we were able to slow that process down here. And as bad as the Illinois legislature is and dysfunctional as it is, even they got the outrageousness of what Exelon was demanding in terms of this situation. It was Exelon's predecessor that argued for a deregulated market here in Illinois where they would sell their electrons on the market and compete. They always claim that they're a competitive entity. They want market-based solutions. But yet, they were prepared to go to the legislature with their hands out for $1.6 billion, no contest. Fortunately, that hasn't happened, but they still haven't withdrawn the legislation. And now...
Why hasn't that happened, Dave? What stopped them from getting the money?
It was a lot of things. I'm pleased to say that our organization, Nuclear Energy Information Service, had a role to play in just literally knocking door to door, explaining to legislators, explaining to the media how outrageous this was, how anti-market it was, how everything Republicans like, it was against. But we also had a lot of really good, solid, I would say, conservative mainstream folks who got the outrageousness of this demand. Crane's Chicago Business was excellent in their coverage and just explaining how audacious Exelon's demands were. They pointed out, for example, that while Exelon was claiming they wanted market-based solutions, the market that would have emerged from their legislation after they got the bailout would have been rigged in such a way that their nuclear plants would get the majority of the bids, and renewables like solar and wind would get table scraps, just like always, and would be frozen out of the so-called market here in Illinois. These guys have no shame. You know, they'll dress a pig in silk and call it their spouse any day of the week if they can get a buck out of it. And that's essentially what they're doing in Ohio now, is the flip of that. It's like, oh, we're a market-based company. We want market-based solutions in Ohio. That's why we're in favor of keeping Davis Bessie going. But, you know, we can undercut you, as I said, because we're capitalistic cannibals. So it's what you're seeing here are the death throes of a desperate industry, a failed industry, which hasn't been able to function in the market that they themselves created. We knew that was going to happen anyway, but, you know, they did it. And just about every arena they go into, they fall on their face because people laugh them out of the store. The nuclear industry went to Paris, which I think you're going to touch on a little later in your show here. And even with James Hansen, you know, the great climatologist and other scientists saying we need nuclear, nuclear got nowhere on the international scene because everybody gets it. You know, it's too expensive, takes too long, creates radioactive waste. And, of course, the proliferation issue is not just proliferation issue, but the nuclear danger issue. I mean, the notion that Ukraine wants 13 more reactors built in a war zone just shows the lunacy of expanding nuclear power internationally. So you have this company, Exelon, you know, perfectly willing to undercut anybody else to remain afloat as long as they can. And that's what you got going over there in Ohio.
So Exelon, which is based in Illinois, perceives that it can make money in Ohio by undercutting the First Energy, which we refer to generally as First Enema, with a market-based throat
allegedly
cutting,
market-based
allegedly, and then in comes who's the utility you mentioned, Kevin, in the South that has jumped in as well?
Dynegy, the coal plant operator, is out of Houston, and they're also with that. They've outbid Exelon, but it's a question as to whether, you know, it's a competitive market, because that's what the PUCO is considering, is undoing, you know, whatever it's been, more than a decade of competitive market advances in Ohio, which, again, First Energy and its predecessors called for in the first place.
Right. Well, it was one of the most infuriating pageants I've ever seen in Ohio. They came in and said they want to have a free market economy in Ohio, but first, in order to have a free market in energy, they had to bail out like $10 billion worth of nuclear power investments because they claimed it wasn't a level playing field. And now, of course, a few years later, they're saying, well, we can't compete, even though you poured billions of dollars into our nukes, and so you now have to give us a guaranteed contract to buy power from Davis Bessie, even though the power is way above market level, and now these other companies, sharks like Exelon, radioactive sharks like Exelon and Dynegy, come in and say, we can undercut Davis Bessie. I hope to hell all these guys just blow up and go away, and we wind up with renewable energy, because the governor of Ohio has been killing, you know, John Kasich, possibly the next vice president, have been killing, doing everything they can to kill renewables here in Ohio. I won't go into the detail because I want to start that discussion with Judy Treichel and Steve Frischman in Nevada. Now, Steve and Judy, we've known each other for decades fighting nuclear power, nuclear waste, especially Yucca Mountain. You mentioned, I asked you what's happening with Yucca Mountain, the great nuclear suppository in the sky there, and you said an interesting thing about the status of Yucca Mountain. You want to tell us what's happening with this mega waste dump that from hell that's gone nowhere?
Okay, the little bit of history is in order here, so you can sort of understand why things are so quiet right now. In 2010, the Department of Energy submitted a motion to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to withdraw their license application that they had submitted in 2008. And it's because there's the Department of Energy, and pretty much at the direction of the president, just said that this thing is not workable and we don't want to go forward with it. And we need to find some better way to take care of waste. So the Nuclear Regulatory Commission licensing board ran the whole thing through their own regulations and looked at the Nuclear Waste Policy Act and said, no, you can't withdraw the application. So because in 2010, the Congress stopped giving any appropriations to either the Department of Energy or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to proceed with the license proceeding, they were pretty much out of money. So the Nuclear Regulatory Commission just suspended the licensing proceeding and their review of the license application. Well, then the state of Washington and the state of South Carolina and Aiken, South Carolina, filed a lawsuit saying that under the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, the commission was not permitted to stop processing the license application. And so ultimately, the case went through the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and ultimately, on a 2-1 decision from the panel of judges, they told the NRC, even if you have very little money left, you have to use up the money and processing the license application. And if the Congress gives you more money, continue. If you run out of money, well, we can't order the Congress to give you any more money. So two of the judges went that direction, and the head judge said, this is ridiculous. You know you're not going to finish processing the thing. You know you're going to run out of money, and so all you're doing is consuming money, and money that otherwise would not have to be spent. So the Nuclear Regulatory Commission knew that they didn't have enough money to do very much of anything. So what they did was they told the staff to finish writing the staff evaluation of the license application, which is a process called the Safety Evaluation Report, which they had, when they suspended the proceeding, they stopped writing the report. So they said, we think we have enough money to where the staff can finish off its analysis of the license application to support its position in a hearing if there ever is one. And then they said, well, we think we have enough money to do that, and also we found that the DOE's environmental impact statement was deficient in one area and needs to be supplemented. That area is a pretty important one. It has to do with contamination of the groundwater outside of the repository area, and that's the groundwater that's used for farming and the state's largest dairy in the valley near Yucca Mountain. And they had not properly analyzed what the impact of releases from Yucca Mountain would be on that groundwater and on the areas where that groundwater discharges to the surface. So DOE at first had said, okay, we'll do the supplement back in 2010, but then they changed their mind. They said, no, we're not going to do the supplement. They're not doing anything with Yucca Mountain. If you need a supplement, you, NRC, you write it. So NRC has finished the draft. Final, we've all commented on the draft, and it's a pretty lousy job. It's not really materially better than what DOE did in the first place. And so they finished the draft, and now they're saying that there will be a final of this supplement sometime this spring. And they still have a little bit of money left, so the final use of the money is going to be to put the document database back together again. When they suspended the proceeding, we have a document database for not only DOE's documents, but all of the parties' documents and the NRC documents on Yucca Mountain that was about 2.5 million volumes or documents. And what they did when they suspended the proceeding was they took that all apart. And so now we don't have a searchable database if we're going to proceed with any kind of licensing. So they have money just enough money, they think, to put that back together, and then there won't be any money to proceed with the actual licensing hearing. So at this point, we're just sort of sitting and waiting for them to go final with the supplemental EIS and seeing what they're going to do to put the licensing document database back together. And then the money's going to be gone. And then we sort of sit and wait, because there are some Republicans in the House who are just insistent that Yucca Mountain has to get started again. The Senate is not particularly interested in starting Yucca Mountain again, because there was a commission put together by the Department of Energy that was called the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future. And it was mainly to try to sort of put together the framework for how to develop a consent-based siting program that would lead to ultimately to maybe some storage, some consolidated storage, and to a repository. They didn't talk about Yucca Mountain at all. They were just interested in the process. And the reason they're talking consent-based is at least in part because the Department of Energy put into its description of why Yucca Mountain is unworkable that the reason it's part of the reason it's unworkable is because Nevada has been fighting them for 30 years on this thing, and they haven't made any real progress. So they sort of get the idea that you can't force a state to do this. And we've often have said throughout this entire process that if DOE can't beat Nevada, they can't beat anybody. So we're now in the situation where probably nothing serious is going to happen until after the election. And then if the Republicans get a stronger foothold, they're probably going to push more for Yucca Mountain. If the Democrats get a stronger foothold, it's possible we can make Yucca Mountain go away forever. So, and we're in a situation where all the Republican candidates have been here. All the Democratic candidates have been here. The Democratic candidates are sympathetic with us, meaning we're not going to force anybody to do anything. The Republican candidates are all saying, let's do Yucca Mountain. It's the greatest site in the world. So we're just, the best description is we're sitting here waiting to either win or have a fight bigger than we've ever had before.
Amazing. Okay, a devastating report from Steve Frischman there. Thank you. So we've heard now on the crumbling Davis-Besse reactor, the battle of the dinosaurs on whether the Ohio Public Utilities Commission is going to hand this crumbling reactor billions of dollars to keep operating. We've heard about the crumbling status of the Yucca Mountain waste dump, which is just basically an underground railroad from one hole in the mountain to another. Now we want to get to a critical moment here with Judy Treichel in Las Vegas on the counter-assault by the Koch brothers and other fossil nuclear fossil nuclear industries to prevent solar energy from moving ahead. And we've had a huge blow up in Nevada on solar. So Judy Treichel, can you tell us what is happening with solar power in Nevada?
Well, as I have often said, for 30 years we've been fighting Yucca Mountain, and people, particularly in the nuclear industry, would say, well, how do you expect to keep your air conditioners going in Nevada and keep your lights on without nuclear energy? And I said, well, we've got plenty of solar. In fact, it would run us in Nevada, and we could probably give you quite a bit too. So solar did start to take off in Las Vegas and throughout Nevada, but particularly Las Vegas. And for any of you listening, or I imagine any of you on the phone who have been here to Las Vegas, the one thing you're really aware of if you're here in June and July is that the sun is really, really bright. And so rooftop solar began in a big way. The utility was giving pretty good incentives to do it. There's a good tax break for people who install rooftop solars on their house. And we, along with about 17,000 other people in Nevada, installed solar on our house. And at that point, it looked as though the thing was really getting set to to take off in a big way, and the utility decided
that...
Well,
wait one second, Judy. What year did you put the solar on your house?
Pardon me?
When did you put the solar on your house?
In November. When?
We put solar on, and it started working November of 2014. So all during 2015, we had solar.
And do you own the panels? Do you lease? What kind of deal do you have?
We own.
You own the panels. You bought them from a company or a small supplier? Did you put them on yourself?
Yeah, we went to a electric contracting company where my son and grandson just happened to work. We arranged for them to put panels on our house that all during 2015 were working great. And our monthly costs were running about $15 a month, except during a couple of months in the summer when we had used up the credits that we started saving up. But we decided that if everything went along as it had been in 2016, we'd be great, because we would have had, from the end of the really hot period of time when you're running the air conditioner almost all the time, we would have been building up credits. So this year, we would go right on through and we would just be paying a basic service charge.
So you were anticipating no real electric bills in 2016?
Yeah, you have to pay a service charge, and there's a few other charges in there to maintain the grid and to do all of the other kinds of stuff that they do. But the total bill was coming out to around $15 a month in order to just keep all of that going. And
how many, did you have lease payments or finance payments on your panels, or did you pay cash for them?
No, we paid out of CDs that we had that were retirement, but deciding that going green and having solar was a really good thing to do, and having a lower electricity bill was a good thing for retirement. So that was our decision. And we had decided that we could do a payback in around 8 to 10 years or something. So at that point, it would have been as if the CD was still there.
And so now, and you did this under with certain subsidies and so on from the state, is that correct? Did you get tax breaks and federal tax breaks, state and federal?
Well, the power company had been, I think, financed through the state to do an incentive program for anybody signing up. So depending upon the size of your installation, you got a certain amount back. And when you did your taxes, federal taxes the next year, you got 3% or 30% of the cost of the system back as well. So our out-of-pocket was about $8,500.
Wow. 30% return, is this 30% refund of your federal tax payment?
Yes.
Or a deduction? How does that work?
You get credit. Back a tax credit of 30% of what the solar installation cost. And Harry Reid just got that included in the budget going forward for, what, about 4 years?
5 years.
5 years.
So solar has been booming in Nevada, basically.
Yep.
And it's a big business and a lot of people work in it, right? A lot of jobs.
Yeah, it picked up about 6,000 jobs.
6,000 jobs?
Yep.
That is a lot. So now what has happened that's threatening to change all that?
So the NV Energy, which is a monopoly, it covers all of Nevada, and you don't have any choice to go anywhere else to get your electricity. NV Energy, somehow or other, through their arithmetic, decided that they had built a case where they could say that solar people were actually shifting costs to non-solar people, that we were being subsidized by our non-solar neighbors. And I think you can prove anything if you own the pencil, but the truth of the matter is we are generating electricity. Much of the time during the day, we're generating more than we use, and that electricity goes to the closest neighbor that's using electricity at that time. So they're given whatever it is that we're making in surplus, and the way the deal started out
It was kilowatt for kilowatt. So with any energy that went on to our neighbors that we didn't use, we got a credit for a kilowatt that we would need, say, at night when we turn on the TV or whatever. And that was the way it was set up. That's how we did the arithmetic to decide what our payback period would be and what our total cost would be. And so the NV Energy went to the Public Utility Commission to say that they would need an increase. They should probably make net metered customers into a different class, and their rates would have to be raised, our rates. And that would make it so that they would not be subsidized by non-solar people. And the Public Utility Commission went from there and went way beyond. We had heard from an NV Energy person, a person working for the company, that when we were alarmed at what they were asking for, he said, look, this is just a negotiation. They never give us everything we ask for. So we're going a little high. We expect to get somewhere in between, but we think we'll get what we need. So our PUC, which I don't know, may have been influenced by Alec or somebody, gave them everything that they asked for. And the most egregious thing was that they made it retroactive so that it covers all of the existing customers. And in our case, we will never get a payback for what we put on, because the price increase is really quite substantial. And instead of doing kilowatt for kilowatt, they have now gone to a monetary system where they place a value on each one. But the kilowatts, in simple terms, the kilowatts that we are putting back because we're not using them as they're being made, are priced at a much lower rate. And when we do need to get back some of the credit, we are charged a higher rate than what they placed on the value of what we were putting in. And the service charge, which was the lion's share of the $15 that we paid, $12 of that $15 was a service charge, will, at the end of 4 years, be up to $38. So it's more than tripling. And we will wind up paying more than we did before we got solar. So the industry, all of those installers, the local companies as well as the national ones that came in, are pretty much out of business for residential rooftop solar, because it's silly for anybody to buy a system under this situation.
So you went in and put in your solar panels under a set rate structure, and then they went back and changed the rate structure on you retroactively?
Yep. They always say, well, you know, we've always had the right to either raise or lower our prices. And then during the hearings, it was absolutely incredible, the stuff that we heard when we were sitting in the audience. And, of course, we weren't allowed to say anything. But the assumption was that the only people putting solar on their roofs were very affluent. They were the wealthy people. And as you know, people who do what we do are not wealthy people. And one of the Public Utility Commission people said, well, you know, this is like any investment. You go out, you buy some stock in a company that you think might be going somewhere. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And we just sat there with our mouths open, because when NV Energy makes an investment, whether it's a generating station or anything else that they do, it can be a total flop, but they're guaranteed a 10% return on investment. And that's why they don't like solar, because if they're building plants, if they're buying things, if they own the energy, they get a guaranteed return on investment. With us troublesome resident solar owners, they do not get that.
Well, that is really sick. Has there been a public reaction to this?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday was their hearing. There was a motion made by the Bureau of Consumer Protection, who has been fantastic. They're out of the Attorney General's office, and they usually have been kind of milquetoast about a lot of stuff that they do, and we've had to kick them around, and they've been really great. And they petitioned for a motion to stay the increase in rates because the rates have already gone into effect as of the 1st of January. And the meeting on that was yesterday. It took me longer to walk to the building because I couldn't find a parking spot except for very, very far away than it did to drive over there. And it was thousands of people. They were up
thousands.
And down. It was amazing. And when I got about halfway through the line just to sign up to go in, they announced that nobody else would be allowed into the meeting room or the overflow room, and people would be allowed in one at a time as somebody left the meeting. And they had 500 people sign up to comment, which at 3 minutes apiece is about 25 hours. But, of course, people sort of gave up. And they had a full agenda that was going to take most of the day, but their agenda was not able to start until around 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. And we were pretty much at the top of the agenda, and they said what they wanted to do. Has anybody got a motion? Yes, I move that we deny the stay. I second. I. That was it. End of story.
Sickening. That's sickening.
Yep.
It'll have to be amazing. What would happen, Judy Treichel and Steve Frischman, if you went further and put more solar and got a battery in your basement and a generator and then unhooked from the utility?
That's not allowed by the utility. You're only able to put on your roof, what is it, about 98%
of
what you
use? You're only allowed to offset right around the same amount as you would consume. And also...
What if you just left the utility why would the utility, if you're not hooked up to the grid, why would the utility have anything to say about what you do with your house?
Because the legislature has passed a law that says you can't go off grid.
If you're within the utilities area, and all of the state of Nevada is in utilities area, but I think some of the rurals have a different deal. I think in their case, they can be off the grid and they can have battery backup. But at this point, we're just kind of checking off boxes. We asked for the stay. We didn't get it. We've asked for reconsideration. I'm absolutely sure that we will not get that. But that case is set to be heard on February 17th, and I'm sure they'll get another overflow crowd. And once that's been exhausted, then the lawsuits start, and I'm sure that that's where this thing is going to wind up, because we've got Earth Justice, we've got Vote Solar, we've got all of the national groups that have been paying attention to this thing, and they don't want it to happen because they believe in solar, but in addition to that, they don't want this kind of a precedent to be able to exist for other places.
So this
was
really
similar to this in Wisconsin, that not as bad, but similar to this, and Earth Justice just won the court case on that. And got it through.
Where? They won a case? Where?
In Wisconsin.
They won the case in Wisconsin on a similar situation?
Yes.
Kevin Camps and Dave Kraft, have you seen any assault on solar parallel to the one in Nevada?
This is Dave. I'm not familiar so much with the solar situation, but as you may know, Harvey and other listeners, just yesterday, the Wisconsin House of Representatives has removed the nuclear moratorium construction. So it's a very non-progressive legislature in Wisconsin. Kevin, do you have anything to add on that?
Well, I mean, Steve and Judy, you've got competition now from Wisconsin. I guess they want the dump up there is what they've done. I mean, this is a 33-year-old ban on new reactor construction in Wisconsin until a waste solution is found for the high-level radioactive waste. And so, you know, the first repository is not slated to open until 2048, according to the Department of Energy now. So that's a long time away. So, you know, also Harvey had asked if I was familiar with any solar attacks on solar, and we were attacked on solar at Davis Bessie because one of our contentions against the license extension was that solar PV all by itself and also wind power just on land, terrestrial wind power, let alone the Lake Erie shoreline, offshore wind, but either solar PV or wind power alone, each of them could replace Davis Bessie's 908 megawatts electric, certainly put together in combination. And what was really ironic is that First Energy, only a few years ago, purchased a energy storage. It's called Compressed Air Energy Storage Facility. It's a cavern-like structure in Norton, Illinois, near Akron. It's hometown headquarters. And that would be the perfect way to make solar PV and wind energy work across Ohio with this energy storage technology. And the licensing board granted us a hearing to talk about all this stuff. And the NRC commissioners reached in and by unanimous ruling said there will be no hearing. We don't want to hear about wind. We don't want to hear about solar. And it was a violation of the National Environmental Policy Act because the NRC staff had not done this analysis. And, you know, as Judy mentioned, we're kind of hard up for resources at times. We didn't have the resources to take that to court, although I guess that's a burden on us, right, to defend the National Environmental Policy Act when a federal agency is violating it. So, yeah, we're familiar with attacks on solar, Harvey.
Well,
we were known that it could easily replace Davis Bessie. We had the emeritus chairman of the physics department at the University of Toledo as our expert witness, Dr. Al Campan, who is a solar PV materials inventor, and they weren't interested.
So this is basically utility fascism. I mean, this is a dictatorial situation. I did run into this. We have a house in Los Angeles, and I was going to put solar on it. And I brought out Solar City, the big installers. And this is LA has a municipal utility, the LA DWP, and that the DWP also will not allow you to put full capacity solar receptors on your house. The licensed installers are allowed only to install panels up to a certain percentage of your consumption. It doesn't have anything to do with the capacity of your house. I want to just fill up the house and have them arrest the house. I mean, it's ridiculous. So this is a serious fascist pushback against renewable energy. I mean, obviously, the renewable technology is changing the entire face of the technology of generating electricity and freeing us from coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And the utility pushback, led, of course, by the Koch brothers, has been to prevent people from doing this and also from sticking it to people like Judy and Steve, who, I mean, you guys put out a lot of money, a lot of effort, and now they're doing everything they can.
Maybe the downfall of this whole thing, their overreach may be the thing that really gets them in the end, because it was the retroactivity that the Public Utility Commission just did that on its own. NV Energy didn't ask for that. They asked for net metering. They call it net electrical metering or net energy metering, called NEM, NEM, that there was going to be NEM 1, which were people like us who already had the system, and NEM 2 for anybody building a system after January. And that this would all apply to NEM 2, which I would not be happy about. I'd be on the front lines fighting just like you are. But it was when they made this retroactive, covering all the people that had already put out the money, that I think they may have really messed themselves up, because this is going to be a class action suit where I'm sure there'll be several attorneys that will be interested in it. But the people who already have the systems and have been paying attention and really like what they have and the deal that they had, they are now all set to go to court. So I think they may just have something happening here in Nevada that they could have prevented.
Do you know numerically how many people put panels on their houses that are now being hit by this retroactive assault?
Yeah, the total is just under 18,000.
18,000?
Yeah,
throughout
the state, and that represents about 1.5% of the utility's customers.
Well, that's a lot. And 18,000 people.
It's a lot in number, but in percentage of the utility's customers, it's very, very small, and they just want to make sure that it never gets any bigger.
Well, 18,000 people at, say, what, 10 grand a pop, let's say, that's a ton of money that was invested.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, has SolarCity, Elon Musk went ahead and built, or is building a billion-dollar battery factory in Nevada. Has he reacted to this at all?
It's actually a $3 billion facility, Harvey.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are they saying now?
Yeah, Tesla and SolarCity stay pretty well separated. SolarCity has left. They, as soon as this thing was passed, they laid off 550 people to begin with. They moved several of them out, and they pulled all of the applications that they had in at the county and at the power company, and any systems that were not completed, they took back off of the roofs and replaced the roof the way it had been before. So they're gone. There's another leasing company called Sunrun that has moved some of its operations, but the rest of it is still here. But otherwise, it's the ones I'm most familiar with are the local smaller businesses that only do residential solar installations. And the company that my son and grandson work for, they're much bigger. They do residential just a little bit. They're mostly on hotel jobs and the very large commercial, the Air Force Base, all those very large things, which are in a very different class. They're not under threat like homeowners with residential.
It's unbelievable. It's just staggering. We are talking with Kevin Camps from the Beyond Nuclear organization, Dave Kraft from the Chicago-based Nuclear Energy Information Service, and Judy and Franklin Steve Frischman in Las Vegas. We're almost out of time. I mean, this is just, you know, I want to take this phone and throw it through the window. It's just staggering, the fascism that's involved with this. And there's only one, it's the only term you can really use. Corporate control of the state is the definition of fascism. And that's what we're talking about here. There's no philosophy. There's no higher good. There's no, general public welfare discussion going on here. This is theft, and this is destruction, even the basic property rights. Judy and Steve, do you have a website people can track you down on?
No, but we have email, and you've got that. So if you get interest from someone, just give them our email, and we'll be happy to help them out.
All right, and Dave Kraft, what is your website?
www.neis, that's Nancy Edward Island Sam, .org.
And Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear?
It's just beyondnuclear.org.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask people to write me at the station. You can write me at solartopia@gmail.com. And this is one of the most outrageous things I've ever heard. I mean, the idea that that these companies could get away with going after solar and stopping wind power and retroactively forcing people to essentially go into debt on good faith investments in renewable energy, which are good for the environment and good for the economy, 500 jobs out the window like this, it's just astonishing. So I want to thank you all and thank the crew in New York for being with us on another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We'll see you next week, and we'll try to keep our blood pressure down. Thank you guys so much for being with us.